Major support for Only a Game comes from Bicon Dental Implants, since 1985 offering discerning patients and dentists options for same-day replacement of missing and compromised teeth. Information online at Bicon.com or at 800-88-BICON.
This is Only a Game. I'm Pippin Ross. Bill Littlefield is riding the pine this week. The Detroit Pistons won NBA championships in 1989 and 1990. If you didn't live in Detroit in the late 80s, you probably didn't like the Pistons. And if you didn't like the Pistons, you definitely didn't love Bill Laimbeer. The four-time All-Star drove fans and opponents crazy with his physical play. Some called it dirty, but whatever it was, it worked. His team usually won. The 6'11" center retired from the NBA in 1993, but he's winning again, this time as the coach of the WNBA's Detroit Shock. The team had struggled on the court and at the gate, but this year they're in first place in the Eastern Conference, and attendance is up almost 50%. Joining me now on the line is Detroit Shock head coach Bill Laimbeer. Bill, thanks for joining me, and sorry about those disparaging remarks.
That's all right. I'm used to all that stuff.
I bet you are. When you were hired last year, the Shock was 0-10 and finished out of the playoffs. Now your team is in first place. Did you think your team had the talent to be as good as they've turned out to be this season?
Actually, yes. I had to make a lot of changes to get to that point, though. Last year I identified all of our players and what their capabilities were, and I had the power to make all the changes myself. So I embarked upon a process, and it was all built around our best player, Swin Cash. She's an outstanding individual, competes like crazy, a great player, and I needed to surround her with not only great basketball players, but also really nice people, because chemistry is the most important thing that I was looking for.
Seeing as you seem comfortable about this topic, I'm just curious, has your particular style of bad boy basketball rubbed off on your team?
It depends what you call bad boy style. If I describe my style of play when I was playing, it was a very intense mental game that I competed for the entire 48 minutes and played to win championships. And if that's what I can instill into our ball club, hey, great. That's what we're trying to get accomplished. We're playing for a championship. We're not just playing to play basketball.
Geez, Bill, it didn't look that mental to me.
all games are mental, whether you're playing tiddlywinks or chess. The name of the game is to mentally intimidate your opponent and make them quit.
All right. So you are the Shock's head coach, head of player personnel, and you're involved with marketing and ticket sales. Is there any other title that we need to know about?
No, in the off season, I'll spend a lot of my time, helping with sponsorships and ticket sales. Right now, a lot of it is with practice and game plans during the season, and also getting on the radio to help promote our product.
What challenges, if any, are there for a guy coaching a woman's basketball team?
Well, you can't just walk through the locker room whenever you feel like it. That's one of the drawbacks. But this is professional basketball, and you treat the ladies the same way as you do the men. They are at the top of their game. They are the pinnacle. They've played basketball for a long time. They're expected to know how to play. So you can be very demanding of them and what you expect out of them, because if they don't, then they get cut and they don't have a job. So, it's professional basketball is great. Professional athletics is great because, it's so competitive. You really have to get out there and play and pay attention. So I enjoy that ladies listen. And ladies listen much better than the guys do, by the way.
I know that.
And I suppose you would. But anyways, it's been fun. They've listened. They've executed. And the success we're showing just takes us to another level.
Now, when you were Mr. Tough Stuff NBA, did you ever imagine that you'd coach a women's basketball team?
No, I knew I'd be a coach one day. Mm-hmm. That I happened to be in the women's game. I wouldn't have thought that until about 4 or 5 years ago when my daughter became of age got very intense in AAU basketball, and I was coaching her for about 5 years in AAU basketball, and the competitiveness of the ladies was what really surprised me, and it's only getting better and better as time goes along.
Bill Laimbeer is the coach of the WNBA's Detroit Shock. Thanks for speaking with me, Bill, and good luck this season.
Oh, thank you very much.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the NBA draft at the Fear at Madison Square Garden.
The NBA season of free agency began Tuesday, 5 days after the 2003 draft. Fans at Cleveland, Detroit, and Denver, the teams with the top three picks, are hoping the talent snagged by their team, LeBron James, Darko Milicic, and Carmelo Anthony, respectively, will be bolstered by at least one gifted free agent. That's particularly true in Denver, where fans are deeply discouraged. So much so that on draft night, the few patrons inhabiting sports bars concentrated around Coors Field were downright dour. Slumping next to his beer, a fan named Kevin says 18-year-old Carmelo Anthony, considered the most NBA-ready of all the draft picks, won't last long in the Mile High City.
I think Denver's biggest problem is nobody cares about the NBA. That's why they don't want to pay anybody to stay. When you can only get 5,000 people to go to a game, why are they going to pay somebody that's good to stay and play here?
Case in point. Former season ticket holder Graham Carpenter not only stopped going to games, but last year he got so frustrated with the 17-65 Nuggets, he wrote general manager Kiki Vanderway a letter. In it, he complained the team is awful, and the games just aren't as fun as they used to be.
I said, you need to bring that back. You need to make good free agent moves, which I believe he's going to do this year with all the salary cap cleared up. I said that he needs to make sure he picks correctly. In the draft, I don't think he made a good move when he took Skeetish Beely, but I wrote the letter and he never responded. I even ended it with P.S. I am not a crackpot.
Though most fans present at draft night, crackpots and otherwise, were eerily quiet in their gloom, Carmelo Anthony has generated a barely audible buzz that seemed to grow louder after Nets superstar Jason Kidd announced that Denver was on his short list of teams he's considering. Nuggets fans Joseph Sanchez and Alberto Garcia hope, perhaps partly because of this, Anthony will break with tradition and stick around. They say the Nuggets need Anthony, and vice versa.
The Denver Nuggets are so bad, there's not going to be a grooming period for Carmelo Anthony. He's going to be thrown in there, and, you know, I think he's going to do all right.
I agree. I think that, for one, the Nuggets can't afford to keep him on the bench. I think that that's one of the reasons that I think he's happy about actually coming here, is the fact that he'll get a lot of minutes. Whereas if he would have ended up in Detroit, you know, who made the playoffs last year, he might not get the same minutes that he would here in Denver.
If Anthony gets his minutes and Denver acquires an impressive free agent, it will work wonders to prop up the town's team spirit and recover from the blow of not getting to LeBron James before Cleveland. Besides, says David Singer, NBA draft history has proven time and again that the first pick isn't always the winner.
But you know what? We'll see what he can do. You know, you don't really know until he steps on the floor and has to go against a Kobe or Tracy McGrady or Kevin Garnett. You know, time will tell.
When Commissioner David Stern announced that the Cavaliers would make 18-year-old LeBron James the first pick in the 2003 NBA draft, a celebratory explosion hit Cleveland, and the giddy shockwave swept through Ohio and beyond. James is the most fervently anticipated NBA rookie in years, perhaps even decades. But one Clevelander is apparently immune to all the excitement. Bob Price served as the Cavaliers' communications director for 20 years. He stepped down on Wednesday from that position for a change in career as a junior high math teacher. Mr. Price joins me now on the line. Mr. Price, this begs the question, what are you, nuts?
A little bit nuts, probably, but this is something that I've been thinking about for quite a long time. I've always wanted to get into the teaching profession, but I am one of the ones that is definitely excited about having LeBron James coming to Cleveland. That's just definitely going to be something exciting for all of us here in northeastern Ohio.
I know. So why the urgency to get to math? Why not hang around for a bit?
Well, after 20 years working in the position here, it's the type of thing where I've got two small kids at home and want to spend more time there and coaching their baseball teams and basketball teams, and knowing the time that is going to take to do the job the right way here with the Cavaliers, it's going to be some 100-hour work weeks having LeBron in here. And normally it's about 80-hour work weeks anyway, so I'm used to the long hours. So it was something that I'd been considering prior to the drafting of LeBron.
So whoever replaces you, what advice do you have for him or her?
I'll catch up on your sleep right now, because come basketball season, it's going to be nonstop, and you know, get the suitcases ready to do a lot of traveling this season, and be ready to answer a lot of phone calls, and hope that you've got a lot of patience, because the person coming in will definitely need that.
What sorts of things might be going through your head when you sit down to watch the Cavs' first game of the 2003-2004 season?
It's going to be very strange for me watching them. I'm sure I'll be here as a fan, assuming I don't have classes that night. But it's going to be very different kind of looking around and, you know, thinking of the things that I'd be doing at that point versus watching the game. I kind of get caught up in seeing everything else that's going on instead of what's going on the floor. But I think with LeBron's first game, I'll definitely have my eyes more attuned to what's going on the floor.
A little bit poignant then?
It's going to be very strange. It's, you know, when I left here for the last time on Wednesday, it's, you know, definitely had a strange feeling, and it's going to definitely take an adjustment period.
Bob Price is the former communications director for the Cleveland Cavaliers. He'll put chalk to blackboard once he passes Ohio's certification tests. Mr. Price, thanks for joining me, and good luck with the tests.
Thank you very much.
I'm packing up my things. I'll soon be leaving. I'm going to Polka Town. It was there I met a girl one evening. Now I'm Ohio.
It's 18 minutes past the hour. Belgian adventurer Fons Orlemans is planning his seventh transatlantic voyage, which he hopes to undergo next year. His latest vessel is a 6-ton steel bottle currently under construction. The Belgian tar has previously set sail in a truck attached to a raft and a steam boiler. Orlemans' most recent bateau currently lacks a motor, a kitchen, a bedroom, and navigation system. Now I need to find a brewery which will fund me, the Antwerp native said recently. And what brewery wouldn't want to sponsor a microwave oven and GPS transponder for a Belgian determined to navigate the world's second largest ocean in a 1,200-pound bottle? Gotta get on bottle up.
I'm Bob C. with these sports headlines. In yesterday's American League action, Boston homered 7 times to beat the Yankees 10-3. Baltimore bettered Toronto 8-5. Tampa Bay edged Chicago 4-3. And Minnesota clobbered Cleveland 9-2. Elsewhere, Kansas City beat Detroit 9-8. Anaheim shut out Oakland 1-0. And Texas stopped Seattle 3-1. For Only a Game, I'm Bob C. in Boston.
I'm Pippin Ross. Bill Littlefield is off competing in the Mongolian Open tennis tournament. At least, that's what he said he was doing. Today at Center Court, to the surprise of no one in particular, sisters Venus and Serena will vie to determine the best tennis player in the Williams family, at least for today. There are some men playing on Sunday, too, I think. So here to wax witty and wise on all subjects Wimbledonian is NBC's Bud Collins. Hi, Bud.
Hi, Pippin. How are you?
Good. Now, after an unexpected plot twist resulting in the absence of Serena and Venus at the French Open finals, the Williams sisters are once again contending for a major championship. What happened to the supposed demise of Venus?
Well, I don't know, but I'm glad that it was perhaps only supposed, although it seemed very real in Paris. She was down in the mouth. She seemed discouraged. She played badly. It had something to do, I think, with a pulled abdominal muscle, which she had suffered previously in Warsaw. But she just wasn't the old Venus. And I asked her, Venus, where has your wonderful game gone? And she didn't have an answer. Now, I don't know whether pulling herself together has been... Of course, it's been of her own doing, but I guess she has just decided that life can still be beautiful, and she's never been more ebullient than she has been here. And it's great to see. She's a wonderful smiler. She's been playing terrific tennis. And even though she hasn't beaten Serena the last four times, I give her a good chance.
Has that affected the mood at Wimbledon? Are people happy to see the sisters once again?
I think it's a toss-up. Some people say it's getting boring. I don't understand that kind of reasoning, because when you have two tremendous players and athletes as they are, why, I love to watch them play. But I know what they mean. People say, let's see something new. So there was a chance for Belgium, Kim Clijsters and Justine and Ardenne in the semifinals, and there we had two sisters against an entire country, but it didn't matter. They came through it quite well. And especially Venus, because she was injured during the match, she admits that she was saved by a rain delay when she could have attention to her abdominal area. And she was trailing in the match. She came back to beat the number two player in the world, Clijsters, beating her soundly in the third set 6-1.
So which sibling takes on the bigger platter today?
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb. I picked Serena before the tournament started, but I hadn't seen Venus. And having seen the mood she's in, and I don't know if the injury will restrict her. She did something, she said, it was unprecedented. She said, whenever I've been hurt during a match, that was it. I quit. Hmm. And her mother said to her during the interval, either play or quit. It doesn't matter to me. And she decided she was not going to, that Wimbledon meant that much to her. So I don't think she's going to quit against Serena either. And I just have a feeling the way she's been playing, she might pull it off.
Why are the Williams sisters always there at the end? Is it because they're so far above everyone else? Because the next tier of players aren't as good as perhaps they should be? Or is it both those things?
Well, the common, and I'm finding trite expression, is they've raised the bar. Mm. What they've done is put the rest of the players behind bars. They just are better. And these things happen in all sports for a while. They're not going to stay better, I don't think, because it does attract the real competitors to do better. But the others are getting a little closer. Serena has lost to Justine Ardenne three times recently. So I think that more good players are going to come along, and it's not going to be as easy for the Williams. But they are, they're headed for all-time greatness if they haven't reached it already, and that's a pretty tough order for anybody.
Well, certainly much has been made this week of the new wave of young female golfers. Are there young counterparts in the world of tennis whom you feel may begin to challenge the Williams anytime soon?
Well, I think there's a 16-year-old Russian, Maria Sharapova, who is a six-footer, hits the ball wonderfully, and is a delightful character. She's lived in the United States for about 7 or 8 years, so if you talk to her, you think this is an American teenager. But no, she's Russian. She came out of Siberia. But she's one name that I'll give you that I think quite surely she's going to be a champ.
Okay, well then, let's talk about the men.
Oh, those boring men.
Unseeded Mark Philippoussis will play for his first Wimbledon championship tomorrow. Would a victory by the Australian help bring a bit more excitement to what many have kind of considered to be a lackluster men's tennis?
Well, I tell you, Andy Roddick has brought a lot of excitement to it, but he lost to a magnificent Roger Federer in the semifinals. Federer really cleaned him up, and he's Swiss, and he looks like the champion to me. He does everything well. And since he beat Pete Sampras here on center court 2 years ago, effectively ending Sampras's reign, he has looked like the player who can do the job. Now, Philippoussis has been out for a long time with knee injuries. He's had three surgeries to a knee. He was in a wheelchair for 2.5 months. Some doctors told him he should never play again, but he did find one who was willing to operate and told him he would play again, and he has. He's 6'4", and he's trying to continue the Australian tradition. Last year it was won by Leighton Hewitt, and the two previous years Patrick Rafter was in the final. The Australians have been the greatest champions this tournament has seen, so perhaps Philippoussis can add to that.
Well, but it sounds a bit like you think Philippoussis doesn't stand a chance against Federer.
Oh, he stands a chance. Anybody who can serve as huge as he does, he had 46 aces against Andre Agassi, who had been my pre-tournament pick, and that tied the tournament record. So if he can keep that serve going on grass, I think it could be a very tight and enjoyable match.
Bud Collins covers tennis for the Boston Globe, NBC, and for Only a Game. And he's the author of the just-released book Bud Collins Total Tennis, published by Sport Classic Books. Thanks for speaking with me, Bud.
Thank you, Pippin, and I hope Bill does well in Ulaanbaatar or wherever the Mongolian Open is held.
At Pumpkin Ridge in Oregon, the U.S. Women's Open heads into the weekend with Vari Mackay 4 shots ahead of the pack. 13-year-old Michelle Wee made the cut, but encountered some harsh words and an alleged shove by tour veteran Danielle Amakapani, who was reportedly incensed that the young Hawaiian walked in her line of sight on the 14th green. Other than varying degrees of golf etiquette, what do Jack Nicklaus, Donald Trump, and Bob Newhart have in common? They're caddy. Sports writer Rick Riley carried, and occasionally dropped, golf bags for all sorts of pro golfers and celebrities, a group he describes as the great, near great, and reprobates of golf. His experiences on the links have been collected into a new book titled Who's Your Caddy? I met up with Riley recently at the Denver Country Club and wasted no time putting him on the spot. I asked him to read an excerpt from his book, which captures his reverence for caddies.
When I cover a golf tournament for Sports Illustrated, I'd be toast without caddy quotes. I'll send a limo for the caddies. All the stuff you hear from the players' agents, swing coaches, mind gurus, flex trainers, and masseurs don't equal one cigarette-smoking caddy going, some bitch is golfing his ball. Or, my man's hooking like Divine Jones.
Okay, so, love, respect, and do I detect a wee bit of envy?
For caddies?
Yeah.
Yes. Because they get to go all over the country, stay in Motel 6s, drink all they want, and play the best courses as soon as their round is done. That's why it's fun.
No, I can't imagine. I mean, here I'm standing here with your book, tape recorder, notes, a pen, and I've got stuffed in my, oh, I did, under my, in my bra here.
Oh, geez,
I had the yardage sheet, but I think I've lost it. So wasn't that caddy cum journalist thing really physically demanding, mentally challenging?
Oh, it was. And, you know, Casey Martin, the guy who won the Supreme Court ruling to be able to drive a cart because of his leg, he's got a bad leg. I thought that would be a week off for my feet. But he said, dude, you can't go anywhere near the cart. You can't put a tee on the cart. So the whole week was Casey 100 yards ahead of me and me going, say, Casey, can I ask you a question? So it's very hard. And they walk so fast. You have no idea how fast golfers and caddies walk. Far faster than you've ever walked in your life. And they make it look like they're just... But they get out there fast.
So how'd you train?
You know what I did is I took this bag and I put, like, bricks in it. And I put all my clubs. Like, I'd have 25 clubs. And I'd walk around here or this place near here called Castle Pines, which is sort of like going up K2, you know, or Annapurna. And and it would be 5.5 hours walking. And then I'd wear leg weights and stuff. And even that doesn't prepare you because, for instance, David Duval or Jack Nicklaus's bag goes 40, 45 pounds.
And would they put, like, a whole bunch of extra junk in it?
Well, you know, they've been known to do that. Nick Faldo once did that to a guy he didn't like. He put, like, 25 balls in the bottom of his bag. So, yeah, they'll do that to you. You got to be careful.
The pros you caddied for, it sounds like, particularly Jack Nicklaus, Tommy Aaron, David Duval, all sounded downright scary, if not kind of mean.
I don't think they were scary. It's just that they're trying to make, you know, $100,000, $1 million in a week. And they don't particularly want a guy screwing up and asking them questions, I guess. But there were some things that I felt like were a little bit over the line. Like, Tommy Aaron, on one of the first holes I caddied for him at the Masters, the 2000 Masters, he hit this shot, and I said, get up, to his ball. And he said, keep your mouth off my ball. And I said, well, no, sir, I'm using this wet towel to clean your ball. He said, no, never speak to my ball. And I'm like, well, you're about to shoot 84. Maybe somebody ought to have a little chat with your ball, you know?
So there's a lot of insider caddy lingo in this.
Yes.
And I'm just going to give you a little quiz here.
Okay.
All right, ready?
Yes.
The three ups.
Show up, keep up, shut up.
Very good.
One guy gave me a great line. He said, you know, the best for a pro caddy, the best phrase you can have at your ready, you got screwed. That's what you tell your player, you just got screwed. Because then it's not their fault and we can carry on.
Okay, the twos.
Well, that was a Bruce Edwards story. He said, you know, he'd always say, well, you know, how come you're not going to be at Castle Pines or some course? And he goes, he'd say, you probably have the twos. It's too hilly, there's too many amateurs, and it's too far to fly or something like that. He gave me a lot of help for this book. He had this thing called the Pro Gap. I sat on a bench at Augusta National for my guy for 4 hours, and he sat waiting for Tom Watson for an hour. And I said, this is not right. And he goes, hey, welcome to the Pro Gap. And I said, what's the pro gap? The pro gap is the time between when your pro says he's going to show up and when he does show up.
It sounds like you got stood up a lot more than...
I got stood up, but caddies get stood up all the time. Oh, we'll do a practice round tomorrow at 7 a.m., so be here at 6:45. You're at 6:45, and they show up at noon. What happened? Oh, well, I decided to sleep in, and the wife wanted to go shopping. And they don't care. Caddies are the migrant workers of golf. You know, there's no insurance. there's no punch cards. There's no union. And that's why most of them drink too much.
But they let you in, right?
They let me in. I think it was because every time I won money on tour, I gave it to the original caddy. So like with Tom Lehman, we won. My caddy fee would have been $6,300. And I think Lehman gave it to him.
Wow.
Gave it to his original. So I got to be quite a popular guy among the caddies. They got the week off and got paid.
Right, and you preface, in your preface of the book, you explain that you didn't take a cent.
Didn't take a cent because caddies would never speak to you the rest of your life. And you want caddy quotes.
Right.
Because caddies, like, I mean, Phil Mickelson will say, you'll say, Phil, how are you hitting your driver? And he'll say, oh, I'm hitting it quite well, you know, like Eddie Haskell. But you go to his caddy and say, dude, we got heat on our toast. We're killing hot titanium, baby. You know, all these great quotes that you want.
What was your darkest hour?
I'd say being turned down for a loop by O.J. Simpson.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, what else has O.J. got to do? Seriously. Plays golf every day, and I've played with him since the incident, as he calls it. And he said, now, why would I do that? And I said, because you got nothing else to do.
Uh-oh.
And he said, I know him from a long time back, so I could at least say that to him. But he said, I don't think so. But I'm thinking, what else you got to do? He's famous, you know. I found him once on a golf course in L.A. after the incident. And he was just playing with three strangers he'd never met before. And I said, is it hard to get a game now that since the incident? And he said, yeah, it is kind of hard. And I said, what do you do? He says, well, I'll come out to a public course like this, and I'll just ask the starter to work me in, like if there's a threesome that still has a space empty. And I thought about that later, and I could just see, you know, you're on the first tee somewhere at some public course and you got it drawn back like this, and suddenly you hear the starter going, can you hold on a second, we got a single to join you, and you look back and it's OJ coming at you with one black glove and a golf club in his right hand. Oh, Jesus Christ, how do I get out of this?
You caddied for Jill McGill.
Yes.
The LPGA.
Yes.
You were quite enamored with her.
From Denver, Colorado.
And there you discovered that women solicit caddy advice.
Yeah, it's never...
And does this mean that women are just more secure?
Probably.
I had to stick that in.
I hadn't thought of that. It could be. It's much more of a romance on the LPGA tour. You know, like, Jill didn't like it if her caddy was, like, looking at someone else's swing. That was almost like cheating.
Wow.
And she, you know, she'd often say to her caddy or me, hey, you know, you're supposed to be watching my swing, you know. And there's, you know, a lot of them sleep together. She sleeps with her caddy. She's had a long relationship with her caddy. Sometimes it's women players and women caddies sleeping together. There's all kinds of sleeping together out there on the LPGA Tour. So there's more emotion involved. And maybe they are more open to advice. Because I think men players are every bit as insecure, but they wouldn't dare take it. The other thing is, a lot of the LPGA players can't afford a coach to travel with them. So they kind of make their caddy their coach, and there's some damn good players. So the LPGA caddies think they're the best caddies for that reason.
Okay, Rick, thanks to you, I think my new life motto is going to be show up, shut up, and keep up.
It's a good motto. Also, keep ready. Oh, you got screwed. That wasn't your fault. That's a good one, too.
Thank you so much for letting us get through the entryway of the Denver Country Club.
And welcome to Denver.
Thanks for speaking to me.
Yes, thanks for coming. Do you like our little town?
Very nice.
It's nice. It's a beautiful place.
Rick Riley's new book, Who's Your Caddy, is published by Doubleday. Share your comments with Only a Game by writing to us, care of WBUR-FM, 890 Commonwealth Avenue, Boston, Massachusetts, 02215, or by emailing oag@wbur.bu.edu. Please let us know on which station you hear Only a Game and how to pronounce your name. You can leave comments on our listener line by calling 617-353-1860. You can visit Only a Game's website at www.onlyagame.org. It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Senior citizens dance in Miami's Little Havana. Horns blare in the bombed-out streets of Kosovo. And steel drums ring below Broadway and a New York subway platform. I'm Scott Simon. These sounds of our world on Weekend Edition Saturday from NPR News.
I'm Bob C. with these sports headlines. In yesterday's National League action, the Mets stymied Cincinnati 7-2. St. Louis stopped the Cubs 11-8. Pittsburgh edged Houston 3-2. Colorado beat Milwaukee 8-6. And Florida foiled Philadelphia 2-1. Elsewhere, Atlanta vanquished Montreal 8-6. San Francisco ousted San Diego 8-6. And Arizona beat Los Angeles 3-1. For Only a Game, I'm Bob C. in Boston.
I'm Pippin Ross. Bill Littlefield is in Tierra del Fuego, starting a soccer league for folk singers with laryngitis. Coming up on Only a Game, home improvement on a major league budget. But first, Charlie Pierce joins me from Austin, Texas, to discuss the week's news. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Pippin.
So, speaking of Texas, the NBA free agency period began on Tuesday. Are there rumors starting to fly down there about which of the best free agents may end up playing for Dallas or, say, San Antonio?
Well, everybody in the league is, of course, fighting over Jason Kidd, which is the most interesting case. But Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, says that there may actually be a glut of free agents on the market, and that the people looking for the big money may experience what he calls a nuclear winter in terms of their prospective contracts. But I still think that the greatest interest down here, of course, is whether Jason Kidd will land in San Antonio or Dallas.
Well, you know, he's narrowed his list to four: the Mavs, Spurs, Nets, and the Nuggets. I mean, nice town, but what a bummer team.
Well, I think he may be – I don't know. Is there any reason in his background why he's obligated to be nice to Denver? Because otherwise, there's no reason for him to – I mean, unless they're going to drive his price up, there's no point in going to Denver. They need a lot more than him. There is a possibility that Denver has actually made him – an out-of-the-box offer just to prove the franchise has some credibility, but I'd have to wait and see on that.
Any other signings do you find interesting?
I think the real prizes in this draft, beyond Jason Kidd, and in this free agent class, beyond Jason Kidd, I mean, I'm not really that excited where Gary Payton may wind up, but the younger people who may wind up taking what's called the mid-level exception in the NBA, people like Gilbert Arenas, those are intriguing because these are young players who aren't quite, you know, where they probably are going to be yet. But they are the kind of players you can build a team around.
So the NHL is also in its free agency period. And on Thursday, Colorado pulled off a bit of a stunner. They signed Paul Kariya and Timu Solani to what each player termed as a package deal, each insisting both be signed. And in so doing, they both took less money than either made last year. That is so cute.
It is Paul and Timu's excellent adventure. Yeah, this is interesting because it puts NHL ownership in a tough spot, because normally in situations like this, they would wax outraged that two players would put themselves together and shop themselves as free agents as a team. But since both players took less money than they made last year, it's very hard for the NHL, which is approaching the collective bargaining apocalypse of all time, to say, well, we don't want this to happen, because even though it saved one of our signature franchises money.
You know, those guys need to be lectured on good old simple greed, I think. On Wednesday, the International Olympic Committee awarded the 2010 Winter Games to Vancouver. Do you approve of the choice to hold the Games north of the border again?
Well, Vancouver is a lovely city, one of the more underrated cities on the continent. It's 5 minutes there from the mountains to the ocean, so certainly the natural facilities are in place. And I think Canada could use a break. This was a good move on their part.
The Tour de France begins today and runs through July 27th. Lance Armstrong has a chance to win his fifth consecutive tour, and Thai Spaniard Miguel Indurain, who won from 91 through 95. Will this be the Tour de Lance?
I was very surprised, quite honestly, to learn that this would only tie the record, that five in a row had actually been done before.
Yeah, I
don't think there's anybody in the world who can beat him. Of course, right now I'm in Austin, which is the hometown of Lance Armstrong, which has Tour de France fever everywhere you look.
David Beckham joined Real Madrid this week. The handsome Brit has already generated lots of excitement for his new football team. But, Charlie, just to take advantage of the fact that Bill's on vacation, I have to ask, does anyone really care about this outside of Spain?
You know, actually, I think people do. I've seen columns in American newspapers. I think celebrity in this country pretty much trusts everything else. I think that, yes, he's married to one of the Spice Girls. He's one of these ridiculously handsome sports stars, and he's making a pot full of money. That qualifies him as an American celebrity, if not an American sports figure.
Now, for some really meaningful soccer news, last weekend, FIFA, soccer's international governing body, banned players from indulging in celebratory striptease after goals. So now what? Nobody but probably Bill is going to bother watching the Women's World Cup in September.
Well, I don't know what FIFA is presuming to accomplish here. What they've done is eliminate one of the more indelible images in the history of their, certainly in the short history of the Women's World Cup. And I guess they're trying to maintain the dignity of their sport, but they certainly don't seem to have any grasp of what makes really good television.
Detective Eldrick is on the beat, so PGA golfers using so-called hot drivers have to watch out, I guess. Why has this turned into Tiger Woods' bailiwick and not, oh, say, the USGA's?
I think it has a lot to do with the fact, A, that Tiger Woods is the most compelling figure in golf right now, including the people who run it, and B, that he's not having, you know, quite the year that he normally expects to have, although he did start the Western Open 9 under par. And he needs something to account for that, and he's going to go around and become the sheriff.
Finally, Charlie, Hot dog noshers from around the world will compete in today's Coney Island 4th of July hot dog eating contest. The diminutive Takuru Kobayashi from Japan has won 5 out of the last 6 years. What is wrong with the Americans? I mean, hot dogs are us.
I don't know. I think, you know, it's another example of an American tradition that's been taken over by overseas athletes. I think there's no question that somebody, some ambitious marketing director somewhere has got to get Kobayashi together with Lance Armstrong. I mean, they are going for 5 Pete's after all.
Yeah, you know, he ate 50 and a half hot dogs in 12 minutes.
Yeah, you can ride a bike up the Alps as fast as you want, but if you can't eat 50 hot dogs in a minute, don't even come talk to me.
Charlie Pierce writes for the Boston Sunday Globe magazine and offers his frank opinions each week on Only a Game. Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks, Pippin.
The recent announcement that R.J. Reynolds would not sponsor NASCAR beyond this season came as a bit of a surprise to folks who follow the Winston Cup Series. It also suggests that the historic alliance of big tobacco with pro sport is changing and perhaps even disappearing altogether. While researching this phenomenon, Only a Game's Gabe O'Connor unearthed newsreel footage that we feel demonstrates changing attitudes concerning tobacco use, sports, and health. We present it to you now.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the National Public Radio Blue Network. I'm Buck Shepperson, and welcome to another edition of the Only a Game Action Sports Desk, brought to you by Jim Thorpe Brand Cigarettes. With that smooth, rich Carolina flavor, Jim Thorpe Cigarettes is the smoke of choice for all ballplayers everywhere. If you don't believe me, why ask big league ballplayer Leo DeRocher?
Leo DeRocher here. Smoke 'em if you got 'em, kids.
That's right. Remember, if you've got a Jim Thorpe, you aren't just smoking a cigarette, you're smoking the athlete cigarette. Dateline Duluth, Minnesota. The Duluth Dynamo's professional football team beat the Waukegan Superbas 19-10 in an exciting day of gridiron action. Iggy Homan rushed the football like a madman behind the bruising Dynamo line. Here's Homan running for daylight, breaking tackles and scoring another touchdown score. And, as if that weren't enough, here's Homan showing off a little leg and kicking an extra point conversion. I bet he could join the Rockettes with those gams. Iggy had a lot to say about his great day on the field of battle.
It was a tough game out there, and after a day like this, there's nothing I like better than having a swell time with my best girl and a pack of Jim Thorpe brand cigarettes.
Way to go, Iggy. Dateline Tacoma, Washington. In basketball action, the Rainier Pros defeated the Walla Walla Maroons 24-21 in a barn burner of offensive basketball. Cam Connors, the mammoth 6'4" center, led his Cager squadron with 8 points and grabbed 5 rebounded basketballs. And he's no slouch with the ladies either. Must be those Jim Thorpe cigarettes he smokes. Keep it up, Cam, old boy. Dateline Anaheim, California. Look out, Ben Hogan. There's a new guy that could give you a run for your money. And what's more, that guy's a girl. Dot Heimer is causing quite a stir in the amateur ranks as she has won 4 straight tournaments. Here she is, showing she can hit the ball as far as the fellas can. Look out below, boys. And while she's queen of the links, she still has a home to keep.
After I finish my 3rd round of the Acme Corset Classic, I'll make a pot roast for my fella and still have time to relax with a nice cigarette. Some may think smoking is unladylike, but I'm also an athlete, and I like to smoke what the athletes smoke. Jim Thorpe Brand Cigarettes.
That's all from the Only a Game Action Sports Desk. I'm Buck Shepperson, and remember, kids, if you want to be just like your favorite ballplayer, don't forget to smoke Jim Thorpe Brand Cigarettes. Jim Thorpe, a gold medal in every pack.
Gabe O'Connor produced our newsreel feature. He is also a celebrity spokesperson for Big Gabe's Flaming Vitamin Sticks. Whether you're a hopeless pipe dreamer, prospective homebuyer, historical restorationist, or just someone who might like to turn their neighbor's living room into a circus tent, there's a home remodeling show for you on cable television. Coming this week, the DIY Network, cable television's channel for do-it-yourselfers, will be airing a series of baseball-inspired makeovers entitled Major League Remodel. Cincinnati sports anchor Dennis Jansen serves as the host and guide for Major League Remodel. And he joins me from the studios of WGUC in Cincinnati. Dennis, welcome to Only a Game.
Pippin, good to be with you.
Now, I'd like to start by playing a clip from one of the segments. This is you and Ken Griffey Sr. discussing the proper way to put up wood paneling in a baseball-themed bunk room for Griffey's 8 grandchildren.
Let me ask you, why don't we just turn around and just tack it up here with nails? What is the purpose of this, actually?
Because you have grandchildren that are going to be using this room. And well, they're going to go, Grandpa, this is loose. The finished nails, because they don't have any heads on them, they can loosen up with wear and tear. And this just gives you a better seal and a better edge, and it just is a little more durable.
Oh, okay.
Well, Dennis, that sounds like sound advice. But, you know, need I remind you, you're a sports anchor, not a home improvement expert. So I'm wondering, when you were asked to do these makeovers, did you worry that you might be just a wee bit out of your area of expertise?
Well, I know what I don't know, and I'm not shy about asking or recruiting help and deferring to experts. And with these shoots, we did have Finnish carpenters, electricians, and people of this nature on hand. But I have a basic working knowledge of electricity and rough carpentry and how to use a mat knife and cut carpet squares and things of this nature and using power tools. It's funny, my interest in tools really goes back to my earliest days as a baseball player as a kid, because I broke a window in the neighbor's house when I was probably 8 or 9.
Uh-huh.
And my father said, well, let's go to the glass shop. And, of course, I had to take money out of my savings and bought a piece of glass, and he showed me how to glaze a window in.
So, Dennis, you know, it's one thing to bust a window with a baseball, like pretty much everybody has, but how is it to cut into the walls of a major leaguer's house?
It can be fairly daunting, but once you find out what is behind the wall and just experience. I have rehabbed any number of my own homes and some apartment buildings that I owned, and you just get a feel. And again, if you don't know, ask. There's no shame in admitting what you don't know.
I also couldn't help but notice you found time for some good baseball talk with former Atlanta Braves pitcher Greg McMichael.
But let me ask you this. What's the idea behind a pitcher's mound for starters?
Well, it's a lot easier to create momentum when you're up on a slope. It's like riding your bike down the hill. You know, the steeper the hill, the more momentum you can create as you go down it. Pitching's the same way. If you're trying to throw off a flat surface, you'd have to create everything. But when you're up on this hill and you're going towards the batter, you don't have to start with as much.
Give it a try.
All right, let's try it out.
Yo!
Yeah.
Applesauce, anyone? You got anything left, big boy?
So, does it work? Did the regulation pitching mound help your game?
Well, I was chucking the pee up there about 52 miles an hour. That was the best I could do. It gave me a new appreciation for just how hard major league pitchers throw a baseball. It was fun to relate to these people. Yeah, these guys have a lot more depth and they have a lot more interest. They just have an unusual job. They're baseball players. And I think sometimes people confuse what they do with who they are, and they would just as soon divorce themselves from that kind of thinking, because they do have lives away from the diamond.
Were you surprised to find out that they were this handy? You know, was it hard to convince them to come on the show and do it themselves?
Well, now, Pippin, don't get me wrong here. A lot of these guys aren't going to be working on restoration of the Sistine Chapel anytime soon. But they did demonstrate, obviously, superior hand-eye coordination, and they followed instructions very well, and they picked things up quickly.
Okay, so, you know, it's fair to say that most people watching won't be able to decorate their boathouse wall with their first major league jersey, or, you know, outfit their batting cage with a pitching machine and radar gun. So what kind of makeover projects would apply to, you know, those of us who are non-major leaguers?
Well, let's take it a step closer to my home, literally to my home. The DIY designers, they said, what would you like to incorporate into your home? What do you have? And I have old press credentials. They fit in a nice montage, and they're by and large colorful, and they just conjure up memories of days when you were young and carefree and out covering the World Figure Skating Championships or something of that nature. And I know a lot of people have badges from golf tournaments and golf balls that they've that have some kind of special meaning. Once you market something and display it properly, it goes from being stuff to being a collectible and memorabilia. And we've done a lot of that. And this memorabilia can extend to stock car decals and old gym shoes and tennis shoes, things of this nature, old tennis rackets, hockey sticks, you name it.
The Do-It-Yourself Network's Major League Remodel, hosted by Dennis Jansen, airs all this week on cable television with a six-hour marathon on Saturday, July 12th. Dennis, thanks for joining me.
Pippin, thank you very much for having me.
Game is produced by Karen Given and Gabe O'Connor. Our technical director is Michael Garth. Our senior producer is Gary Wallach. To order a tape of Only a Game, call 1-800-909-9287, toll-free. CDs and cassettes are $15 postpaid. That's 1-800-909-9287. If you'd like to hear this program again, sign up for the Only a Game newsletter or learn more about Rick Riley's new book, please visit our website, onlyagame.org. Our final word this week comes from Detroit Shock head coach and former Detroit Piston muscle guy, Bill Laimbeer, who says road games against the Connecticut Sun give him the opportunity to see some old friends.
Whenever I go to Connecticut, there's lots of Boston fans come out and have a lot of good things to say.
I'll bet. Things like, how's Dennis Rodman? And Robert Parrish sure knows his karate. I'm Pippin Ross. Thanks for listening. Bill Littlefield returns next week. Maybe.
Major support for Only a Game comes from Bicon Dental Implants, offering discerning patients a same-day tooth replacement solution for failed root canal treated or missing teeth. Information is available online at Bicon.com or at 800-88-BICON.
This is NPR. This is NPR.